On today's episode of Mentally Stronger, how bad is it for us to do those things? We just spend a lot of time staring at our screens and a lot of time indoors and a lot of time going through the same routine every single day.
What we develop pathways for and strengthen pathways in our brains, we're doing it for specific things. So for example, like in the example I just gave, if we're walking around our neighborhood and we're just sort of focusing on our senses, we're actually improving our ability to sense the world. If we're spending our day in front of the screen, we're actually improving our ability to be in front of our screens. And, you know, maybe we're getting like faster click times, we're able to process information faster. So this can be good depending on what your job is. But I think it's really a question of what is most meaningful to you, right? And that's where like intentionality and sort of making deliberate decisions really comes in. And so for me,
welcome to Mentally Stronger, the show that will help you develop the mental strength you need to reach your greatest potential, no matter what life throws your way. I'm Amy Morin, psychotherapist, mental strength trainer, and an international best-selling author of 6 books on mental strength. Every Monday, I introduce you to a guest whose story and expertise can inspire you to think, feel, and do your best in life. And the fun part is, we record it all from a sailboat in the Florida Keys. Now, let's dive into today's episode. Do you ever just feel kind of stuck in life? Do you think that you might be in a rut? Do you feel like you're just going through the motions in life sometimes? If so, today's episode is for you. I'm talking to Jeff Karp. Jeff is a biomedical engineer professor at Harvard Medical School and MIT. He's also the fellow of the National Academy of Inventors. He and his team have invented some pretty amazing things. One of the things Jeff realized was that it's easy to get distracted and go through life seeking instant gratification rather than create a meaningful life. So he discovered that many of the tools that help him create fresh ideas and invent new things have also given him a roadmap for living the best life. So he wrote a book called LIT, which stands for Life Ignition Tools. And the subtitle is Use Nature's Playbook to Energize Your Brain, Spark Ideas, and Ignite Action. Some of the things Jeff shares today are the strategies that will help you find creative solutions to any problem, how to change the way you think about things, and how to spark creative energy. So here's Jeff Karp on how to ignite your life. Dr. Jeff Karp, welcome to Mentally Stronger.
Hey, so nice to meet you.
You as well. I look forward to talking to you about your new book, which is called LIT, which stands for Life Ignition Tools. Mm-hmm. So maybe we should start by explaining what are life ignition tools and why do we need them?
Life ignition tools are strategies, ways to really take ourselves off autopilot. I think today there's just so much information coming at us from every direction. We have so much stimuli around us and our brains tend to gravitate to a state that I like to refer to as the low energy brain state. And the reason I call it that is because it's how I actually feel when I'm in that state where, you know, my brain will like anticipate what comes next. It will kind of like autopilot mode or energy saver mode. And I think there's a lot of reasons why it's there. And I think it's kind of, you know, our brains are trying to help us by being in that state, but I think it actually prevents us from doing all the things that we really want to do and really connecting deeply with people. I think it prevents us from leading with our curiosity. I think it prevents us from being creative. And so the LIT tools are really a way to pry open this wellspring of energy and resourcefulness and really our neuroplasticity that we, you know, it's really our evolutionary inheritance. So these are tools that I actually developed out of necessity when I was a child because I was struggling with ADHD and learning differences. But then these tools ended up being extremely helpful in my personal life and in my laboratory.
How does this fit into, like, though, the idea of decision fatigue? Because I hear a lot of people say you want to be on autopilot for a lot of things in life because statistically we make like 35,000 decisions in a day. You don't want to waste them having to think about what you're going to eat, where you're going to go, what's going to happen next. So I know a lot of people who say that you're better off to kind of be on autopilot when you go through your day. How does this fit in?
Yeah, the way that I think about it is I think we want to be intentional about the things that we're on autopilot for versus just being on autopilot for everything or for things that might actually hold us back. And to me, that's where sort of like these tools really fit in. So I think there's just a tendency for us to be on autopilot for things that we don't want to be on autopilot for. For example, maybe in certain relationships, the tone of voice we might use with people or certain things we might say. And then maybe we kind of come away from those conversations and we're like, why did I just say that? Or why couldn't, you know, that I've been trying to get better at doing that, but you're just on autopilot. You're just always sort of reacting the same way. And I think that, you know, there's certain things where the autopilot can be helpful. Let's say, you know, if you're building a skill, you don't want to have to start over every time at the beginning. And so, you know, you want to kind of like, as you're putting the bricks down, you want to be able to not really think, kind of have like a, you want to be able to not have to tap into this high energy sort of to utilize a lot of cognitive resources, let's say, you know, every single time that you're doing something. But to me, it's really about intentionality. It's really about thinking, okay, what are the things in my life that I want to be on autopilot for? And what are the things in my life where autopilot is really holding me back? And I found there's so many things in my life where autopilot just holds me back from leading with curiosity and connecting with my family members and things like that.
And from a work standpoint, you've been a part of teams that have come up with some pretty incredible things in the medical world. Do you want to talk a little bit about those and how these strategies have helped there?
Yeah, no, happy to. So my laboratory, so I actually started my lab in July of 2007, and it's based at the Brigham and Women's Hospital. My faculty position goes through Harvard Medical School, where I'm a professor actually of anesthesiology, and there's actually a story behind that. I'm not an anesthesiologist, just to full transparency. I also have a position at MIT and the Broad Institute and the Harvard Stem Cell Institute. And what my lab does is that we focus on the process of medical problem solving. And we have no, it's kind of my lab is, I think, quite different from a lot of other labs, which are like just super focused in one area. I had a number of mentors during my PhD and my postdoctoral fellowship who didn't just publish papers, but they actually tried to take the technologies that they developed in their lab and bring them to patients and bring them to clinical trials with the potential to really maximize impact. And I was just so inspired by the potential of being able to do that. That's what I've focused my lab on. So I'll just give you some quick examples. We developed a surgical glue that can seal holes inside a beating heart. And we actually brought that to regulatory approval in Europe for vascular reconstruction. And now there's two clinical trials going on in Australia, one for nerve reconstruction and one for hernia repair with this glue that we developed in my lab. We also developed needles that automatically stop in between the layers of the eye to deliver drug to the back of the eye to treat diseases like macular degeneration. And then we've also developed, actually recently, we developed a nasal spray. So when COVID hit, everything shut down. The only projects that we could work on really in the lab were COVID-related projects. And we were like, okay, well, how can we help in every possible area? We were developing a nasal spray to treat multiple sclerosis. We pivoted to develop a nasal spray that can capture and kill viruses and bacteria. And so we actually just launched a product from my lab, which is a nasal spray that we showed could kill like 99.99% of COVID-19, H1N1, influenza A and B, E. coli, adenovirus, and pneumonia. And anyhow, so those are just a bunch of examples of things that we do in my lab. It's kind of all over the place, but there's a lot of strategy involved in kind of putting teams together and constantly getting into new areas and really reaping the benefits of that fresh area energy by doing new.
So those are good examples of times when you don't want to be on autopilot.
That's right.
You're coming up with ideas that other people haven't come up with, or things that maybe nobody thought could be done, or you're taking these products and figuring out, well, like, what do we do? How do we make this useful? How do we get it out there to people in a way that's somehow helpful? So great examples of how it helps you professionally. How about personally? How do you use the lit tools, which we'll get into in a few minutes, but how do you use these tools in your personal life?
Yeah, actually, maybe just before going to my personal life, just one thing I wanted to add to the previous answer in my lab, just to give you just some examples of how, you know, really using these tools is. So one is like by constantly getting into new areas, I think there's this tool that I refer to as Do New. It's a way to just usher in fresh energy into our lives. And it's almost like the more you do new in your life, the more capacity you have to do new and the more gravity you have to do new things. And our brains just love it when we engage in new activities. So one of the strategies actually that I use in the lab is I minimize the overlap of expertise of people who are there. So we have, for example, like engineers, biologists, chemists, material scientists. We've had a gastrointestinal surgeon, a cardiac surgeon. We've had a dentist in the lab. So it's constantly changing. So by sort of having people in the lab who have very different expertise, it creates this opportunity to always learn something from the people around us. And then we've had people from over 30 countries as well in the lab. And so people are exposed to different education systems. They think differently. So there's just a lot of disruption of autopilot that's happening on a daily basis just because of the makeup in the lab and the types of conversations that happen. And then getting to the question that you just asked about sort of, you know, using the tools personally, and there's so many possibilities that I could, where I could go with this. But one example, and let's stick kind of with the COVID, or I'll come back to in just a quick second, is so, because I have ADHD and learning differences, and you know, I struggled so much as a kid, and no one knew I had it until I was identified in the seventh grade. I was developing these tools, these coping strategies to really survive. What ended up happening was that I was using the tools a lot to become more productive and to be very efficient in what I did, because it just took me so much time and so much energy and effort to understand what people were asking of me and, you know, all these things. So when COVID hit and, you know, we had this big unintentional pause in our lives, maybe it was intentional, you know, depending on how you look at it. And my life kind of came crashing down in my living room. I all of a sudden realized, I was like, wait a moment, what am I doing in my life? Because I realized that my relationships with the people who are most important to me were actually not good. Like all of a sudden, my son was a teenager. And it was like, how did that happen? And you know, my kids kind of stopped coming to me. And I would be, let's say, just so goal-oriented. I'd be going to their practices or sports events, and I'd be just into getting my 10,000 steps, just walking around the field, you know, instead of just being there, being present. At birthday parties, I would, you know, in Boston, it's like everybody, or there's so many people who are in like the biotech, medtech world, and I'd be looking for collaborators at birthday parties. I would be trying to talk to parents to see if we had commonalities for research and things. And so I just realized that I was so goal-oriented. I was so focused on efficiencies, but I wasn't focusing my efforts on what were most meaningful. So one of the tools I engaged is called Flip the Switch, which is really noticing my inner desire for possibility. And I definitely noticed that there was a reprioritization of where I needed to focus my efforts. And the next part of Flip the Switch is really taking stock of what's working, what's holding you back. So there were a lot of things working really well with problem solving in my job and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But what was holding me back was my goal-oriented nature, my focus on efficiency. It was just holding me back because I wasn't focusing on my relationships. And so I needed to consider, what are other ways of thinking? What are other sort of possibilities that existed? And I started to engage in mindfulness. I'd never really been into it before. And, you know, I mean, I kind of dabbled around here and there, but I started to try a whole bunch of different meditation techniques. I started to meet with a variety of spiritual leaders. I actually had such incredible experiences. I invited the spiritual leaders to come talk to my lab, and my lab liked it so much that they kept asking to have this person come back. And now we have another person who's coming to the lab. So really, the tool Flip the Switch was just critical in my personal life during COVID to be able to reprioritize my life through engaging in these mindfulness activities, which really helped me to kind of observe my impulsivity and my reactiveness and just kind of how I was prioritizing things. And it really allowed me to take the time to figure it out and then take that deliberate step forward. And now my relationships are so much better and because of it.
Let's pause to get some offers from our sponsors. Brainstorm. What's something that works so well that it's basically magic? Air conditioning? Noise-canceling headphones, meeting-free Fridays. What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the did we just hit a million dollars stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/mentallystronger, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/mentallystronger now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/mentallystronger. Okay, we're back. So if we took that tool, Flip the Switch, how would somebody else apply it to their lives? That's how it applies to yours. How might somebody else say, I need to flip this switch in my life?
So one of the ways that you can apply this to your own life, so there's kind of like, you know, like a four-step, let's say, like process. So one would be to notice your inner desire for possibility. And it could be in anything, right? So, I mean, it could be in relationship, or it could be something about your work, or something else like at home or personally, exercise related, or it could be that maybe after dinner you're on autopilot and you're just reaching for that dessert every time and you're kind of like, I want to stop that. So then the next step is to take stock of what's working for you and what's holding you back. So really trying to figure out, you don't want to just think about what the obstacles are in your way. You want to think about the positive things, like, okay, maybe you're getting through your day and everything's great until you get to dinner and then you just have to grab that dessert at the end. Or, you know, I'm just using that as one example. But, and so then it's like, okay, well, what are other possibilities? What are other ways of thinking? What you can do there is, you know, you can try to come up with those on your own, but you can also engage in conversation with other people. You can start asking them, okay, what do you do? You might find people who are aligned trying to solve the same thing or to try to, you know, address, and sort of thinking like, okay, what are the possibilities? And the thing about the lit tools is they're not prescriptive. They don't tell you what to do. They just really sort of open up a realm of possibilities so you can then experiment and try different things. So what this tool, Flip the Switch, is really doing is helping you to uncover what are other possibilities. And in the case of, let's say, like the dessert, it might be that, I mean, some of the simple things, maybe it's fruit or not having the desserts in your house, or maybe it's going for a walk immediately after dinner outside and then coming back. Different things work for different people, and lit doesn't tell you which one's going to work for you. It just sort of helps you to figure out possibilities so you can start engaging them and taking that deliberate step forward.
That's one of the things I appreciate about your book. I'm a therapist, so a lot of people come into my therapy office like, I have this problem, solve it. And I don't know what's going to work for somebody. Like you say, it might be taking a walk after dinner, may help 20% of people say, I then avoid dessert. Somebody else might say, I started brushing my teeth right after I ate and then I didn't want to eat anymore. Somebody else said, I delayed dinner. The next person says, you know what really helps is eating dinner an hour earlier for whatever reason, but you don't know until you try. And so we often talk about behavioral experiments. Try this this week. See if it makes it better or worse. Try that and see what happens. So I appreciated that your book is really about just kind of expanding your mind to saying, how can I explore these different things? What do I need to look at? And even the first one that you talked about when you said do new and do different. At work, you engage all of these different disciplines to try to come up with better ideas. But you also talk about how to do that at home, which might be watching a Zoom meeting of somebody in a completely different profession or something interesting. Or again, just going to new places and talking to new people as ways to expand your mind, come up with different strategies and to think about how else you might solve a problem or various solutions that might work for somebody outside of the group of people you usually talk to every day.
Yeah, I think that there are so many on-ramps that you can, and when you start to see possibilities, I feel like it just gets exciting, right? Because, and especially when you see possibilities that are easy to just engage. Just one thing is, if you, and I've tried this, if you change the location of your shampoo in the shower, for example, and then you come back the next day, I found myself, I reach for the old location. It's kind of like, oh, what's going on there? And then you get into the new pattern and you realize it. That's actually engaging your neuroplasticity. You are forming new neural connections once your brain catches on to it. Our brains love novelty. So I think anytime we do something new like that, or if we drive, change the route that we take to work or that we walk, just making, you know, brushing your teeth with your other hand, your non-dominant hand, all of these things initially kind of feel weird. And it's like, oh, I don't think I can do this. But once you start to do it and then you program, then that starts to become more autopilot-like. You've actually engaged your neuroplasticity. You're forming new connections, you're paving new paths. And to me, it's just so exciting that we have this possibility in all of our lives to do that. And I think it's, I really, you know, I've been thinking a lot about it. I really think it's our evolutionary inheritance, right? Evolution is all about adaptation to our environment. Our environments change and then we adapt. So we are programmed to be able to adapt to our environment. But the amazing thing about being humans is we have this prefrontal cortex that which is ginormous, right, compared to most other animals. And so we have the ability to like double and triple down on that, on our ability to say, actually, I'm not just going to be on autopilot. I am purposely going to incorporate new things in my life constantly to bring in fresh energy, pave new paths. And then that just sets us up for being more fulfilled and leading with curiosity and connection and, you know, all the good things.
So I know some of our listeners are going to say, yeah, but I'm tired. I have a full day of work. I come home and I just want to sit on the couch. How do you, how do we talk to people about perhaps the benefits that does this re-energize you? You start doing these things and you feel like you have more energy, or what's the payoff to doing this?
Yeah, I think the payoff is, I think that the payoffs are different depending on the context or what you try. And I think as the more you do it, the more payoff that you can kind of reap from it, right? Like, and so that's why I think that, for example, we all know science has shown us incredible support that exercise is not just good for us to look better in front of the mirror or to be physically fit, but it actually floods our brains with these positive neurotransmitters that can help us in everything that we do, right? Like it can make us, it can help us get more to positive self-talk. It can help us be more open to taking risks. It can help us get beyond fear and hesitation. So I think that often it's hard for us to incorporate that in our lives. And I think the reason is, I think it's evolution is actually part of the problem, but also not necessarily a problem. It's like our brains are actually trying to help us. We were not meant to exercise. We were meant to to hunt, to move from one village to another when and our resources were depleted, or to run away from something. So we were actually meant, we were designed not to exercise. We, you know, our, the exercise we used to get like 12, 15,000 years ago was from actually doing hard work to survive. So that's why I think, you know, if we kind of get back to your question of let's say someone gets home, they're just really tired and they want to sort of, they would like to start maybe engage in something new, but they're just now they're on their couch. I think there's small things that you can engage. One is, for example, is just changing that routine. So instead of coming home and just sitting on the couch, what if you go for a walk around your neighborhood? But you don't just go for a walk around your neighborhood, you actually cycle through your senses, right? And this is something I do all the time. So I'll walk around my neighborhood, like I have two dogs who are not in the room here because sometimes they do bark. So I ask my daughter to look after them. But let's say I go walk around the neighborhood and I'll just say like sight, and I'll look at the texture of the trees and sort of the branches and the leaves, and I'll look at rocks on the ground, and then, or the birds are moving around. And then I might say touch, and then I'll feel my heels hit the ground, and I'm sort of trying to slow down how I walk. So I'm just sort of getting a sense of the wind, you know, against my face, and then hearing, and I'll listen for the rustling of the leaves. And the, and this is actually also embracing neuroplasticity, because the more we do it, the more we're actually sort of developing our ability to sense the world. It can be so, so, you know, we have the option of coming, even when we're tired, we can just walk slowly around our neighborhood and have this incredibly calming effect. And we know, like science has shown us, that when we spend time in nature, there's a shift from the sympathetic to the parasympathetic nervous system. So our heart rate goes down, our blood pressure goes down, our breathing rate goes down, we have better sense of wellness. And so we have that choice. Just going for a slow, steady walk around the neighborhood is something I think that's a low activation energy step. It doesn't really take that much energy to do.
A lot of things you talk about are kind of contrary to the way our world is set up, right? We, these days, it's really easy to just sit in front of our screens and stare at our screens. How bad is it for us to do those things? We just spend a lot of time staring at our screens and a lot of time indoors and a lot of time going through the same routine every single day.
Well, you know, okay, one of the thoughts that I was having actually just before I got on with you is that, you know, I was thinking about neuroplasticity just in the context of like, it really, what we develop pathways for and strengthen pathways in our brains, you know, when we're doing that, we're doing it for specific things. So for example, like in the example I just gave, if we're walking around our neighborhood and we're just sort of focusing on our senses, we're actually improving our ability to sense the world. If we're spending our day in front of the screen, we're actually improving our ability to be in front of our screens. And, you know, maybe we're getting like faster click times, we're able to process information faster. So this can be good depending on what your job is. But I think it's really a question of what is most meaningful to you, right? And that's where like intentionality and sort of making deliberate decisions really comes in. And so for me, I'm someone who I do spend a lot of time on my computer because, you know, I'm writing papers and grants and, you know, there's conversations with students and things that are happening. But I'm also cognizant that if I spend too much time, I'm kind of just using my human potential to get better at interacting with screens. And that's not, that to me is not a high priority objective in my life. And so that's why, you know, I try to get outside as much as I can. And, but interestingly, I'll just throw this point out, which is there has been some scientific studies that show that if you just switch your screen, let's say like midday, to a nature video, that that can have some of the similar effects of switching from the sympathetic to the parasympathetic nervous system. So you can actually have a calming effect. It's not to the same magnitude, but you can get there, you know, if you're in a concrete jungle and you can't really get out into nature midday.
I always love studies like that too. Like I know the hospital patient that has the window view tends to heal faster than the person who doesn't. So then they give you a landscape photo, at least to the person that doesn't have a window, and they tend to heal a little bit faster too. So to hear those things for people who say, for whatever reason, I can't get outside, here's an alternative. I think that's a helpful thing. Let's pause to get some offers from our sponsors. Okay, we're back. Another thing you talked about in your book that I loved was about pinch your brain. Can you explain a little bit about what that one is?
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe I'll just start with the origin story to that. And so in the third grade, my family, we moved out to the country. And it was like literally the country. Like my driveway was 1,000 feet long, carved through a forest. There was like a bridge with a creek under it, and you know, all kinds of, you know, we had snapping turtles and crayfish and leeches. And then walk up this hill, there's like a farmer's field in my backyard. And then there was the house. And so one day I was walking along the driveway, and actually it brings back a lot of memories for me walking along that driveway, because this is a time when I was really struggling a lot in school. I hadn't been identified. No one knew that I had ADHD and learning differences. And so one of the other tools that is so important to me is called Hug Nature, but we can kind of come back to that. But I really felt that. I just want to mention, like, as I walked through along my driveway and you kind of looked into the forest, like, kind of coming off the bus every day, I just felt this like solace, this that nature was hugging me, it was there for me. And one day I was walking and I saw something kind of moving in one of the trees, and I kind of got closer. I looked to the edge of the driveway and it was a bat, and I'd never seen a bat before, you know, other than maybe like in a movie or something. And I was like, oh my God, like I couldn't believe it. I just, you know, I was, all the other thoughts in my mind were squeezed out. It felt like my brain was literally being pinched, and all I could think about was the bat. And I ran home and I told my family. And then later on, I was kind of thinking about it because I had, and maybe we'll come back to this, but I'd had this sort of this transformative experience the year before, where I sort of got this window into my brain to kind of have awareness of my thoughts. And so I started reflecting on it like that night. And I thought, you know, I wonder if I can use what just happened to my attention in school. I wonder if, because I just would sit there in the back of the class and wouldn't be able to understand anything. And so pinch your brain is using your intention to focus your attention to think or redirect your thinking in meaningful ways throughout your day. So to me, it's just like a helpful way that I use all the time as I'm kind of being distracted or directed in ways I'm trying to bring myself back together. I can, by sort of knowing what my intention is, by knowing what my task at hand is, I can kind of feel like I'm pinching my brain. And literally, when you focus your attention, you're bringing more blood flow to certain regions of your brain. This, you know, there's scientific studies that have shown this. And so when we focus our attention, it's not just sort of we look at something else and now we're thinking about it. There's actually things happening in our brain that we have intentionally sort of been kind of pushing this ball down the hill and this cascade of events.
So how do we do that on purpose? Let's say I have to work on a task. Maybe it's a little bit boring. How would I pinch my brain to stay focused on it?
So one of the techniques that I use to do that is super simple, and there's many possibilities. Okay, so what I do is I write the word distraction down on a piece of paper beside me, okay? And anytime I feel distracted or my mind is wandering, or let's say, for example, sometimes I'm like on YouTube and I'm jumping around and I'm like, wait a moment, I'm not doing what I want to be doing, I put like a check mark beside the word distraction. I call this the distraction disruptor. What it has done is it actually helps me to break that autopilot of being distracted all the time. And it also gives me a read throughout my day, like to be like, okay, did I get enough sleep the night before? Am I eating? I'm very distracted today. There are a lot of check marks there. Like, what's different about today? So it can kind of give me clues as to, or cues to things that might be different that I might be able to change kind of moving forward. So it's just like a really simple way of kind of coming back to the task. And often when I put the check mark there, I feel like I don't need to go to Instagram anymore. I mean, sometimes I do because I'm just like, all right, I'm just going to go there. The other thing that I'll bring up to me, which was so fascinating, is one of the people that I interviewed for the book, Molly Gebrian. She's a neuroscientist and she plays, I think it was the violin or maybe it was the cello. And she was talking about how if you have like an hour to do something, let's say you're trying to build a skill, like, you know, as an example, it's best not to focus on that for the full hour, that we actually need to take breaks because mind turns into matter during the breaks. So it's when you, like, your brain can't actually form the new connections and bolster them if you're still busy doing the activity. And so we actually need to have lots of breaks in order for our brain to start to form these connections, to give it time to build. And then she also talked about how when we come back, let's say, to what we're doing, there's this startle effect. So because we don't necessarily remember everything that we were working on. And so when we have the startle effect, it actually piques our attention and increases our ability to learn. So that's why it's really important that we have breaks. And I sort of respect that throughout the day. The key for me is I just don't want to be on break for like an hour, you know, when I didn't plan to be.
So that sounds a lot like physical strength training. You need to lift weights to build muscle, but it's really the rest periods where your muscles start to grow and repair, and that's so important. So that would make sense that our brains are very much the same.
Yeah, exactly. I think the working out analogy is really good. I think it's also really good. I heard someone on a podcast not that long ago talk about how, let's say, when we meditate, sort of like the idea with meditation is that we notice our mind wander and then we just bring it back. Every time we bring it back to our breath is like a bicep curl. And I really like that kind of analogy because sometimes we just need to have ways to frame things, to motivate us and to just put things into context to be able to then use it and sort of come back to it and make it functional for us.
Right, because I think a lot of people are really hard on themselves when they struggle to pay attention or when they feel like they have low energy. We beat ourselves up and it becomes more difficult to say, all right, I'm going to try this as an experiment, or I'm going to go out there and try this little thing and see how it might open up new opportunities or expand my mind a little bit.
Yeah. I think, you know, you mentioned kind of like this self-shame, and I've certainly, that was a big part of my life and something that, you know, kind of have like visceral response to it because I've shamed myself so much in life. And a lot of it came from, I think, teachers in my elementary school just saying, like, you know, you're lazy and you're never going to amount to anything. And just a lot of negativity that I, you know, they said, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I was like, oh, I want to be a doctor. And they're like, oh, I don't think you don't have what it takes. You better set your sights lower. Got to come up with something. So that, I think, for me, kind of fed into this, they kind of got me into this cycle of self-shame. So one of the ways that I've really been trying to break it is just being mindful of the things that I have that are going well. And in particular, the thing that really has worked well for me is just this concept of the whole thing of lit, which is really just tapping into your own neuroplasticity. We, again, like, it's, to me, it's just unbelievable. We're kind of at this point in time where we're starting to realize how much potential we all have, but yet we're only using a small fraction of our human machinery. And it's really in our hands to sort of just push beyond hesitation and fear. And if we're able to do that, we're able to just constantly every day form new connections and bolster connections and create new pathways. Nobody can take that away from us. Nobody can take away from us our ability to sense the world through smell and touch and hearing and sight. And that's ours. And regardless of what's happening in work or in our personal lives, we have that. We all have that. To me, that's just such a beautiful thing.
Well, that's what I loved about your book is you give us lots of strategies, but most of them are free. Anybody can use them. They only take a couple of minutes to try. And they're all things that are just super accessible and things that we might overlook, things that we might not think would have a huge impact. But in your book, you put them into context to show us that these little things, trying different things, whether it's taking a different path to work that day or brushing your teeth with your left hand, can have such a big difference on our lives. So I'm so grateful that you're putting this book out into the world, because I think you'll give a lot of people hope of how they can change their brains. Where can people find you and learn more about your work?
Yeah, so I'm putting a website together now. I have a lab website, but I'm putting a website for the book together. And right now, I'm still working out the details, but I was able to get the domain jeffkarp.com. So Karp with a K. And so you can find me there. And yeah, and I'll also have like a link to my lab's work there as well, if anyone wants to check that out.
Cool. We'll link to it in our show notes and make sure that everybody can find more about you and your book Lit. And I think you'll give a lot of people hope that here you started with ADHD and people told you you wouldn't be a doctor, and look at all of the amazing accomplishments you have. And thank you for sharing what you've learned along the way.
Yeah, thank you so much for this conversation and having me on your show. And I look forward to connecting again, hopefully.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Welcome to The Therapist Take, the part where I break down some of my favorite strategies Jeff shared so you can start applying them to your life today. Here are three of my favorite strategies. Number one, flip the switch. There are tons of ways to solve the same problem, but our brains resort to doing the same thing over and over again, and we tend to think the same way. Do things that will help you uncover new possibilities. You may have heard people talk about this when they talk about emotional agility. It's important to know that there are tons of ways to solve the same problem, and it's up to you to be agile when it comes to figuring out which strategy might work best. One way to do this is to just trade one habit for another, but you could also talk to other people with the same goal to see what works for them, or even find people who've already reached a goal that you want to reach and learn from them. The point is, there are tons of ways to solve a problem, and you want to get your creative ideas flowing. Number two, change your routine. So on the show, I've talked before about decision fatigue and how important it is to reduce it. One way to reduce decision fatigue is by keeping things in your routine the same, so that you don't have to put a lot of energy into thinking about what you're going to wear, what you're going to eat. But making changes to your routine can be important sometimes. It can reset your habits, including helping you get rid of bad habits. Changing things up can also spark new ideas or help you get out of a rut. You don't have to restructure your whole day, though. Maybe go for a walk after dinner instead of watching TV. Or start waking up 30 minutes earlier so that you can cook a healthy breakfast. Those little changes might have a ripple effect on your life. And number three, spend time in nature. You've probably heard a lot of our guests talk about the importance of being in nature, but Jeff had a slightly different take on it. He talked about going for a walk and just paying attention to one specific sense while you're on that walk, even if it's just around the block. That's an interesting strategy. So if you started to be mindful of what you hear, and you just pay really close attention to all the sounds while you're taking a stroll around the block, it might create a shift in your mind. A lot of people will talk about the importance of mindfulness and just being mindful, but sometimes it's tough to know exactly how to be mindful. But if you pay attention to just one sense, it becomes a little easier to put mindfulness into practice. And that might spark some new ways of thinking. So those are three of Jeff's tips that I highly recommend. Flip the switch, change your routine sometimes, and spend time in nature. His book is filled with a ton more tools that can help you on a daily basis. To learn more, check out his book, Lit. Thank you for hanging out with me today and for listening to the Mentally Stronger podcast. If you like the show, leave us a review on Apple or Spotify. That's one of the best ways to help us get our show in front of other people so that we can make the world a stronger place. And if you know somebody who could benefit from learning more about mental strength, share the show with them. Simply sharing a link to this episode might help somebody else feel better and grow stronger. And if you want even more tips on how to build mental strength, subscribe to Mentally Stronger Premium. Sign up at mentallystronger.supercast.com or click on the link in the show notes. And as always, a big thank you to my show's producer, who literally flips the switch to turn on a red light at night because he finds it calming, Nick Valentine.